Hi, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm interested in talking to people who are interested in talking to people who are interested in having a conversation about their future. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Anyway, welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. So I'm very excited to welcome my guest today to Recruiting Trailblazers. Joe Koch is a 30-year veteran of the recruitment industry. He has deep experience as a leader within agency, RPO, and internal acquisition teams, including stints for Teradata, Cisco, NCR, and Wilson HCG. So welcome to the podcast, Joe Koch. How are you, Joe?
Okay, happy to be here.
Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Did I miss anything out in my introduction? Is there anything else that you immediately want to tell us about yourself?
Well, probably a few things, but we probably wouldn't say them in public.
Okay, I did ask you what your favorite film is already, and you told me that it is...
Oh, The Godfather.
The Godfather. Yeah. Great choice. I'm sticking with Point Break, the original Point Break, of course. That's been my favorite film since I watched it and then jumped out of an airplane the very next day. So, but Godfather's a close second or third, I should imagine.
That's where we differ. I don't see a reason to jump out of a perfectly good airplane.
So. That's what pilots say, by the way. Yeah, never jump out of a perfectly good airplane. Yeah. You know, you've worked across, as I mentioned in the introduction, you've worked across recruitment agencies, RPOs, internal teams as a leader. You know, what do you think is the common denominator across the entire industry that applies to all recruiters and all disciplines and remains as true today as it always has about this profession?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, the common thread between all of those would really, I think, boil down to candidate experience. When you think about it, you know, happy candidates make happy employees in the future. So I think taking the candidate journey into consideration, whether it's agency, whether it's RPO, whether it's internal corporate, is really, really important and really will help build on the recruiting really across all disciplines.
Yeah. And I mean, candidate experience, in my opinion, begins with building relationships, doesn't it? And I think that's, you know, as true today as it always has been, that this business is about candidate experience. It is about building relationships, and it is about, you know, understanding what you can do as a recruiter for your candidate rather than the other way around, which I think some recruiters tend to get wrong. You know, they're quick to tell the candidate what they want from them, and not so quick to figure out what they can deliver to the candidate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very good point. You know, you can have the skills for a role, but is the role at the level that you want to be as a candidate or as a future employee? Are you looking to make a move to something different? I think those are things that need to be understood. And as you mentioned, when you're building relationships and actually taking the candidate into consideration versus just trying to make 52 phone calls in, you know, 20 minutes. I think learning that's a relationship that's kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, that's right. You hit the nail on the head there. It is the gift that keeps on giving, because I've always advocated for referral recruiting, which is the concept that, you know, every conversation you have can lead to something good down the road. It's not all about transacting a candidate today or tomorrow. It's actually about setting the table for a relationship that could pay off for both of you in the future. And I think if you take a longer term view of each opportunity that you have to speak with a candidate, rather than basically doing what a lot of recruiters do, which is to say, are you interested in this role and are you available for me to submit you, and not taking it much further than that. So I think if you take a longer term view, and I think a lot of recruiters have got the hang of this, both on the agency side and the internal side now, as they've begun to pipeline candidates for future opportunities. So that's probably one of the changes that's happened, hasn't it, over the years?
I think it really depends on what faction you're looking at. I think in the agency side, absolutely. In the search side, especially executive search, I think the relationship building certainly is key. I think what's old is new now, as far as internal and in corporate recruiting. I think you're starting to see resurgence of that relationship building, nurture, what we would call nurture campaigns, building the CRMs and not just plopping candidates in the CRM to say, look how many I have, but to actually pick out the ones that you are building those relationships with, whether in the future it's for referrals, whether it's for hires, whether it's even for business and specific knowledge in that particular industry or in that particular skill set. It's also, I think, really important for a recruiter to always be listening, not talking. What I mean by that is to understand some of the trends from the people that are doing it, not necessarily articles that you're reading, how it's being applied. And when a recruiter, let's say on the technology side, actually has that knowledge and can provide context to a candidate around how a particular project is going or a particular technology is going, and not just a buzzword, they're going to get that candidate's attention a lot quicker.
Yeah.
I think, and maintain that and maintain it also, and start to build that relationship that we're talking about.
Yeah. Two ears, one mouth for a good reason, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to your point, I think listening, it seems obvious and everybody probably thinks, yeah, I listen. But the key to setting up a good candidate relationship is building rapport in those first or very important 5 or 10 minutes. Because if you can't build rapport, if you can't connect, if you can't find some common ground with somebody, they're not going to really care about what you say after that. You need that moment where you sort of become a human to them, not just a recruiter. And so I've always taught people that it's very important those first 5 or 10 minutes to find a connection, to find some common ground, to find a way that you can really start vibing with that individual so that they sort of raise an eyebrow and go, wow, this recruiter, this Marcus fellow seems to know what he's talking about. I'll listen to him and I'll listen to his advice and counsel. And so I think relationship development is so critical if you want to influence and mutually benefit both the recruiter and the candidate in any opportunity that you're exploring together. So, and I've always said that it's how you treat the candidates who don't get the job that defines your success in the future. And I think these days, you know, we've heard about ghosting till we're blue in the face. It's been talked about and written about for years and years now. And I think a lot of recruiters don't know what to do with candidates when they get to the point where they've been rejected by their client or their hiring manager, right? And that could be the most important phone call of all.
Well, I agree. I think it goes back to what you mentioned about referral recruiting. Referral recruiting doesn't necessarily always come from the candidates that you place. You know, they can also come from the candidates that you don't place. As a matter of fact, a lot of them would, based again on how they're treated. I think what you said is really important. The listening side of it, you know, I think inherently us as humans, we all like to hear our own voice. Sometimes we need to back away from that, ask some questions and sit there and listen. That's something I think that'll be remembered by the candidates. And the thing is, especially if we're starting to talk about some of those high volume recruiting areas such as technology, they're getting maybe 4 or 5 phone calls a day. How do you stick out when you're having that conversation? Because most of them, and I understand from a recruiter perspective, the need to continue to move through the day and push and get and reach out to quite a few candidates. But each phone call, there's an opportunity to gain some knowledge, gain some education, some insight, some networking. That's why I mentioned about, you know, what's old is new, you know, back in the day. And I'm not going to tell stories about walking uphill both ways in the snow. But you did try to come with at least 5 names when you came out of a phone call, even if you couldn't land that particular individual. And then you just kept building your network from there. Again, I'm starting to see that come back in. Like I said, what's old is new. And I think the reason is, and I think when you think about it, I think recruiting is the art and technology is the science. And I think the technologies that's come forward and the tools that have come forward enable you to reach out to more candidates in a more efficient way, and then also start to build those relationships as you make contact and then reach out and continue to make contact. I think it's become more efficient than back in the day of a spiral notebook.
Absolutely. I think that's what technology is for. You hit the nail on the head there. It's not for replacing recruiters. It's for empowering and enabling recruiters to do the part of the job that I've always said is the most important, which is the relationship bit, the talking bit. And I'm sure they're inventing AI that can do that at some point in the future, but it's never going to fully replace a human, hopefully. But I think going back to what you were saying about referral recruiting is that a lot of younger recruiters just sort of, they jump on the phone, they get into the database or the ATS, they call up a candidate, they say, are you interested? I've got this amazing role. Are you interested? Are you available? And then the candidate says no, or they're not interested in the role. And then the recruiter says, oh, do you have any referrals? And that's not the right way to go about this. If you want to be a referral recruiter, you have to earn the right to ask that question. And to earn the right to ask that question, you have to unwrap who that person is and allow them to express themselves and put yourself in a position where if you can't help them today, you can help them in the future. And I've always called that crossing the bridge to becoming a trusted advisor, which is a bit corny, but there is a point in a conversation where if you know enough about your candidate, you become somewhat of a trusted advisor because you understand their situation, you understand their aspirations, you understand their motivations, which is critical, and you understand their skills. And then you're in a position to be able to help them, if not today, anytime in the future. And I think that's, if what's old is new, then that's what a lot of people are refocusing on these days so they can build that really solid pipeline and network of candidates who trust them.
Well, I agree. I mean, that you may not get that on the first call. In some cases, you may get it on the first call. I think there's a little bit of a paradigm shift in that. You know, you're seeing, especially from the internal corporate side, there's a lot of metrics. One being time to slate, very important metric, right? How quickly are we getting candidates in front of the hiring managers? And I think there's a lot of pressure around that actually pushes recruiters maybe into some behaviors that maybe they don't want to do or are a little bit different than maybe how they've addressed things in the past. So I think understanding that and setting metrics that are meaningful from a business perspective is very, 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 very important. But then also understanding that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for candidates to give feedback now. You know, Glassdoor obviously comes to mind. And so to leave that candidate with a good feeling and a good experience has become more important than it used to be in the past. So understanding if it's letting them down, the appropriate way to do so, making sure that they feel that it wasn't a one and done, you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think the bottom line is, really treat a candidate how you'd want to be treated if you were on the other side of the phone.
It's a golden rule of sales, I believe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think you need to make sure that a candidate never feels discarded because it's an opportunity. Every time you put someone through your interview process, it's an opportunity to turn somebody into an advocate for your company, whether they get that job or not. Plus, it's an opportunity for you as a recruiter to add, you know, an important asset to your network, somebody who you can call back in the future who might be a sub for another role in the future. But even more importantly, someone you can go to for advice, recommendations, and referrals if you've built that relationship strongly enough, you know?
And if you think about it too, again, the pressure for recruiters to get the candidates, you know, in front of the hiring managers. So there is some need for what are called just-in-time recruiting. But I think some of this is even goes back to how you manage your desk and manage your day. So if you look at it, you say, okay, I'm going to spend X amount of time as a recruiter doing my searches and my outreach and those type of things. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to spend X amount of time going back and doing some of my nurture campaigns and some of my outreach for some people that I've already contacted. And you start to split your day up that way. Sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees simply because, oh my goodness, I have 12 requisitions. I need to get these candidates out. I have 4 requisitions. I don't have any candidates on. Let me just go out and do these searches.
Yeah.
And it doesn't leave any time for that relationship building.
Now, that's so true, Joe, because my next question was going to be how do you balance? I'm beginning to sound a bit idealistic, actually, because how do you balance the importance of both building those relationships and finding the right candidate? But in many cases, or most cases, meeting your metrics. You know, how do you balance speed and quality at the same time? Sometimes it's not an easy equation to balance, is it?
No, it's really not. And you can plan your day any way you want. It may not necessarily go that way. But how do you come back to that outreach of candidates that you've already had contact with and not lose that at some point during the week and at least make time for those types of things? I think that's kind of the opportunity. But I think sometimes that opportunity is kind of put back because it's, I need to go out to LinkedIn and get, you know, 25 candidates and make sure that I've talked to at least 15 of those and make sure after that I've got 3 submittals within the 4 weeks or 3 weeks that, you know, my metric states I should. So I think a big part of it is a partnership between, you know, the talent acquisition management, whether a corporate, whether an agency, whether an RPO, and listening to the recruiters. But also understanding how the recruiters are going about their day. I think this is there's an opportunity there. I think between the recruiting management and the recruiters to say, okay, let's talk about walk me through your day, right? And how you're spending the time on that, and be able to start to provide some coaching along managing that time, because that's really what it does boil down to, is how do I manage that time now. Let's face it, recruiting, you know, is a hair on fire business. There's no question about it. So again, how do you make that flexible enough? And how do you make those metrics realistic enough too? And maybe you start with a bigger metric than you thought you would, but then as you start to gain efficiencies, whether it's through tools, education, coaching, you start to bring those down a little bit each time. And on the flip side, when you're inside from a corporate perspective, what's the skin in the game for the business? So, you know, if you don't have that piece of it too, it becomes very difficult for the recruiter. Simply because a manager's thinking, well, there's 3 more, 4 more candidates coming my way. If I, you know, you're not giving that type of feedback, and you start to look at those ratios, not just from the TA side, but from the business side also. It's just as important on the agency side, just as important on the RPO side to understand, is this a manager that, you know, we're at a 3-to-1 submittal to interview ratio, or we're at 11-to-1 submittal to interview ratio? And, you know, from an agency perspective, the one that 11-to-1 is not going to get as much attention as the one that has a 3-to-1. And so I think that's an opportunity. I'm kind of do a little change in direction here. I think it's an opportunity for corporate America to understand that, you know, when you're dealing with agencies, they're going to go where they have opportunity.
Yeah, they're going to measure, you know, the client's ability to get back to them, how quickly they get back to them, what kind of quality their feedback is. Agencies, and I believe internal recruiters, are looking for partnerships, both in their clients and their internal stakeholders that they serve. And they're always going to work harder for individuals, you know, who provide that really, really profound feedback and allow you to do your job much better.
This episode of Recruiting Trailblazers is brought to you by Vertical Move. Vertical Move builds world-class digital transformation, product, and software engineering teams by sourcing only the top 5% of passive technical talent. Vertical Move's AI-powered digital skills assessment and paired programming protocols exemplify the most qualified candidates, thus expediting the hiring process and saving customers valuable time and resources. Vertical Move, for technical talent you can trust.
When it comes to time management, because I think we are in the business of prioritization as recruiters, there's so many plates spinning. We've got so many plates spinning at any one time. What kind of advice do you give people and recruiters and leaders in setting up their day and managing to meet these metrics?
I think understanding, you know, what the priorities of whomever you're servicing, whether it's from an agency perspective or whether it's from an internal perspective, you know, and where you're at in the recruiting process. So if you have a manager that has some interviews going on, I don't necessarily need to prioritize. And you have some candidates that you've already had some outreach to, I don't necessarily need to prioritize that particular manager. But what does that look like from an overall perspective? Being able to understand where you are in the recruiting process with each of your recs will actually help you prioritize whether I now have time to go back and do some outreach to some candidates that I've already talked to and do some referral recruiting, or, you know, when I need to generate some more candidates, I've got no submittals on, you know, 30% of my requisitions, so I need to pay attention to that. So I think it's really understanding your world, understanding, this is probably another conversation, understanding the data around what you have in your world. And what is that data telling you? I think if you understand that, that points you in the direction of how to manage your day, how to manage your week, maybe even how to manage your year. It just depends.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you have a basic understanding of the metrics that are the backbone of our industry, and obviously it changes for different roles and different industries and domains, etc. But if you have a basic understanding of how the business operates and sort of success ratios through the recruiting lifecycle, then it's possible to reverse engineer what how much effort it's going to cost you to fill most roles. And so depending upon the role, you know, it might be like a full stack developer role, and that's what you work on usually. And you know that that usually is going to cost you probably, you know, 200 to 300 outreaches. You're going to be required to do some serious personalization to that to ensure that your response rates are pretty high. And then you're going to turn those individuals into potential submissions and then ultimately potentially placements as well. But I think if you don't know, if you're just out there on LinkedIn, just going, let me see if I can find another candidate, I think you have to approach it, you know, with a project management mindset and set yourself up for success at the beginning and say, this is how much is this going to cost me? This is what I'm going to do. And these are the likely results. Because the only things that you can really impact are either the quantity of your outreach or the quality of your outreach. And so if you get the balance right, then you should be able to achieve the objective that you're looking for. Would you agree?
I do agree. I think there's opportunity to understand what information and what data the tools that you're using can give you also. And that's kind of where we get over into the science side now from the art side of relationship, and really digging into what is the data, to your point, that's meaningful that helps me direct in that regard, or quite honestly, understand identifies where we may have some pinch points. It may also, so one of the things over the years that has become very obvious is when you have a hiring manager screen and you go to interview and you're looking, and the hiring manager screens might go 75% make it to the interview. But then you're looking at your interview and how many are passing the interviews when you have your team interviews, and you're seeing maybe 20%, and you're like, why such a disparity? Lots of times that's because the manager has one idea about what they're looking for. The team has another idea of what they're looking for and what they're focused on. And if that conversation doesn't come together from the hiring manager and the interview team, that's typically the result that you see. So understanding those pinch points in the recruiting process and how to get that data, even as a recruiter, is extremely important. Because then it lets you bring some kind of neutral conversation that's not emotional. It's really focusing on, hey, you know, we're typically at a 3-to-1 here. You're at a 10-to-1. How do we change this? Here's where I think we're missing. You're looking for 5 for 5. The market data tells us that, you know, there's only 20 people available with that. This is a really good time to be a recruiter and a really good time to be able to pull this data in and have fact-based conversations that will actually change the dynamic with managers quite often.
And that's assuming you can build a relationship with your manager,
absolutely,
whether they're an internal stakeholder or a client, if you're an agency recruiter, of trust. Because if they don't trust your feedback, then they're just going to keep on insisting that they want the perfect candidate. But if you go out to the market and you sort of market map, you know, or talent map that particular skill set, and you come back and you say that there really aren't that many people or if any available with this blend of skills, but what we have found is this, this, and this, you have to be working with someone who's willing to be consulted with and to take that into consideration and say, potentially alter the spec in order to meet the market conditions, right?
Yeah, you do. I think bringing that data forth helps us start to establish that credibility and potentially opens the door to those conversations for people you may not have built that relationship with. But it has to really, now this is the next part. It's not just about getting the data. It's not just about presenting the data. It's about telling the story in a meaningful manner to the individual that you're actually conveying it to. And there is knowing your manager becomes very, very important. Each person receives this in a different way, right? So understanding, just as you would a candidate, How do I reach the candidate? And what's the hot buttons for that candidate? It's no different. What's the hot buttons for that manager? Is it the skills? Is it the location? Is it the salary? Is it, what is it exactly? Is it the actual projects that they've worked on? And being, once you understand that, you can tailor that story and that data to what is going to really resonate with the manager at that point. So even understanding that and taking the time to talk to your managers to understand, again, what's the hot button. I may sit here and say, you know, there's only 20 people available in Utah. Well, the manager's looking for somebody in California. Why do I care about Utah?
Right.
Boom. You probably, that's strike one from a credibility standpoint. So, I mean, it's kind of a odd example, but it's just trying to illustrate, you know, the thought process behind understanding what is so important for the manager and putting that story forth. I think a lot of people just throw some numbers out there. It's good that we're starting to actually use numbers. I'm seeing that done a lot more than you used to in the past. But again, utilizing that data in a way that's meaningful is extremely important, basically telling the story.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying also is you're underlining the importance of a really productive intake call as well, and really exploring all four corners of what a hiring manager is looking for and what a team's looking for in terms of the attributes, the accomplishments, the qualities, the experience, and then having, you know, meaningful conversation around that so that you've got a profound understanding of what you need to go to the market and find. And so I think intake calls are just absolutely critical. And I think everybody in the recruiting industry that agrees with that these days. Unfortunately, on the agency side, because agency recruitment continues to be devalued, especially in weaker economies, it's harder to have those conversations. And it's tempting to go off on a wild goose chase and try and find candidates for clients who aren't willing to do intake calls. But then you're just sort of playing potluck recruiting. You're just sending in candidates and hoping for the best. I know it's tough advice, but I think if you're working with an organization as an agency recruiter and they're not willing to sit down with you for half an hour and really go through that requirement and what they're looking for and, you know, what the business challenges that they're looking to sort of resolve through the hiring of that person, then you need to look in the mirror and ask yourself, do I want to work with this client, or am I just going to be playing the potluck game with them until such time as I may or may not find the perfect candidate? And so that part of the relationship, setting up the relationship as an agency recruiter, is often the trickiest part, because you have to achieve a degree of trust with your client in order to become successful. Otherwise, they're just going to sit there and reject everybody, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The successful, I'm going to say, vendor relationships that we've set up in the past from an internal perspective have been just that. The recruiters really have partnered with the agency recruiters because the internal recruiters tend to be the conduit a lot of times to the managers. And a lot of times what the agency, the external agency is experiencing is actually what the internal recruiter has experienced also. Not being able to sit down for an intake call, not getting the type of feedback that's needed to make those adjustments as you move down the road. So I think there's a really, I think for internal talent acquisition to understand that, you know, the agencies are, you're always going to have agencies as part of your strategy. Now, it may not be 50%, 60% of your placements. Of course, agencies would love that, right? 50, 60%, I get it. But it is still part of the strategy. You will reach out to agencies at some point. I've realized that as an internal TA leader. I realized that on the agency side, realized that on the RPO side. And once you accept that and understand that the goal is to fill this requisition. Now, internally, you know, if you're having a lot of push back on agency usage, then that's a whole different story. It's something that really talent acquisition organizations need to understand. Back to what I just mentioned is, you know, we're going to eradicate agency usage. You're always going to use search firms, whether they're at the C-suite, senior exec levels, some of the mid, especially on the technology side, some of those mid-level professional positions. It's always going to be there. So I think the first thing is accept that. The second thing is partner with it, so you have a partner down the road, not somebody that feels like, well, you know, this TA person calls me, you know, when they need me, but yet I don't hear back from them. Again, to your point, You know, here's the bottom line from an agency perspective, again, having been in there. You're either a client or a source. It's one or the other. And it's nicer to be on the client side.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I think this sort of advent of internal recruitment and the building out of these enormous internal recruiting teams is, you know, is obviously some sort of an attempt to not to put agencies out of business, but, you know, to bring the entire function in-house. And so it's become a lot harder for agencies to integrate as a service provider with teams that have fully built themselves out right across all functions within the industry, within the company. What advice would you have for agencies and agency salespeople in approaching the TA function and approaching TA leaders and companies to say, how can we complement what you do and not necessarily compete with what you do, but how can we work in harmony with your team and provide the service that you're looking for? How do you advise people do that these days?
That's a good question. You know, really being able to sit down and understand, you know, where are you having difficulty? And where are you historically having difficulty? Not just for this week, but if you look back over a few year period, TA leaders should be able to say, these are my tough to fill positions. These are the ones that are taking me the amount of time. So I think understanding what those are and not from an agency perspective, try to be a one size fits all. We can help you with all your needs. Maybe it's more break it down into where do you need the help? And again, not where do you need the help today, but where have you historically needed the help?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where, again, I can only give you my view from a TA leader, from a, you know, kind of strategic planning perspective. That's what I would focus on. I would focus on, okay, here's the areas that we need help. Yeah, we're going to give it a go. But in the same regard, we're going to be open to go outside. And these are going to be the areas that we can actually explain why we have a higher cost per hire, maybe because we're using an agency. But the bottom line is we're getting them filled. Here's what would happen if we didn't.
Yeah.
And so being able to explain the agency usage inside, how you're using and why you're using them, that's a TA leader's job. From the agency perspective, being able to say, this is where we can help you, tell us where that is, and making sure it is something that you can actually, you have the expertise to come in, and again, not trying to be a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, in my days as an account manager in the tech recruiting business, I always used to ask the question at intake stage, what are the consequences of this position remaining unfilled to establish urgency? It was always a great question to ask. I've told lots of people about that, and now I'm telling everybody on the podcast. You've been an internal leader. If an agency comes to you and says, look, I know you don't necessarily use agencies, but we specialize, particularly we've built pipeline in the following areas. Maybe it's data science and data engineering, you know, or cloud infrastructure, whatever it might be. And we can really help you with these, specifically with these roles that we know that you have, because we've got such deep relationships in the candidate market. Is that a value proposition that resonates with you?
It is, if you hit the right button,
right?
It's all, timing is everything, like I said. But yes, it should be, and it shouldn't, not just for me, but really any TA leader should recognize the value of all a network that's already been pulled together.
Yeah.
And you know, that's going to help with some of those, again, those metrics of like things like time to slate and things like that. Does it really matter if it came from an agency or it came?
Yeah.
Internally, it really shouldn't, because the ultimate goal in let's say on the technology side is time to productivity. If it's a sales side, it's obviously, you know, time to revenue production. Those should be the focus areas of talent acquisition and how we get quality candidates in to be able to and source be damned. You know, and but now there is that focus that we need to source everything ourselves. I do think In a lot of cases, you do need to show your value add internally, no question. You know, the TA budgets are pretty substantial nowadays, a lot more than when I first started in this business. So there's a lot of again, how do we make sure the perceived value is there in the investment from a budget perspective to an internal TA organization, but then also that investment is really useless if you're not filling roles. And again, coming back to The bottom line is to get people in the door, quality people in the door, and focus on, again, time to productivity, so we're not missing production schedules, so we're not missing design schedules, so we're not missing our quotas in revenue. That really should be the primary focus for talent acquisition. Talent acquisition exists to support the business. If the business isn't there, there is no TA.
Right. And in your experience, and as someone who's crossed the bridge from agency to internal, how does the structure of an internal TA team, you know, differ in terms of either their function or their strategy from what you're used to? And how hard was it for you to adapt moving from one to the other?
It's progressed over the years. You would love to see a makeup of, a focus of internal that would act as an internal agency. I've been fortunate enough to be around that a few times in my career. But most of the time, I think the internal recruiters have the opportunity of inbound candidates where the agency doesn't.
Right.
And I think there's a reliance on the inbound candidates to some extent, maybe in some cases an over-reliance and kind of a wait and see in some cases. I don't want to say everybody does this. I want to make sure everybody understands that.
There's some great headhunters who moved to internal as well and who've worked in some of those tougher sort of candidate-driven markets back a couple of years ago. But obviously, you know, the worm has turned a little bit now, hasn't it?
It has. Whereas an agency recruiter, you're making your living on those placements.
Yeah.
It is, and having done that, I will tell you, it's really motivating.
Yeah, I mean, as an agency recruiter, your value proposition has to be to your client, we can unearth and find and deliver candidates that you would be unable to find just by running ads on LinkedIn and Indeed. And if you can't say that, then you've got to look in the mirror and question your validity. If you're an agency recruiter and you're relying upon inbound, what are you doing that an internal team couldn't do?
Well, the agency value proposition is, I think, pretty straightforward. It is you have that network built, right?
Exactly.
And that's the value proposition. And that's what internal TA needs to understand. And again, I'll say it time and time again, build that into their internal sourcing strategy. You know, whatever percentage works for you as a company, that agency usage would still be built into some certain percentage, whatever that percentage is that makes sense. And some of the smaller companies that, you know, are up and coming, it's going to be a larger percentage. And some of the larger organizations with the plethora of, and I actually had this experience in the past, my problem wasn't finding candidates. My problem was screening candidates because there were so many there. So that's the value proposition. I think it's gone from, again, a one size fits all. We can help you with everything to, hey, look, this is where we focus. This is, you're having, like you said, full stack. Maybe that's what it is. This is where we can come in with our network and actually, you know, cut to the chase and bring candidates much quicker than when you run out. And most of those people aren't on LinkedIn or they're not answering you when you reach out on LinkedIn.
Yeah. The hard part these days is just getting a foot in the door to sort of, you know, create the opportunity for a conversation. It used to be the rubber used to meet the road when you sat down with the prospect or the client. But these days, you know, there's so much cold email, there's so much outreach, there's so much noise out there. It's a lot harder for agencies just to get a seat at the table, just to have that initial conversation. And that's a problem that I think a lot of agencies are struggling with these days.
A presentation is everything. If I heard if I'm on the phone and I hear something canned that I've heard 42 times, it's going to be a 5-minute conversation. If I hear somebody starting to ask me questions that really resonate and really are trying to understand what my issues are as a talent acquisition organization, and those questions are really meaningful, we're going to have a longer conversation.
That's great advice. Yeah. So someone who's actually willing to sort of get to grips with, you know, what the business problems are that need resolving, rather than somebody who just phones you up and says, do you have any requirements?
Or, hey, you know, I saw you posted an opening for this. Well, we have 52 people in our data. No, you don't.
Right.
I mean, I've heard that so many times that, you know, that is probably a 2-minute phone call.
Yeah. Yeah. When you crossed the bridge from agency to internal, what part of the job did you find the hardest?
there, you know, with agency, again, I think you're driven, you're really driven because you're making your living on placements.
Yeah.
When you move into corporate, a little bit different, obviously there's pressure to make placements, but that paycheck's coming in. So when you look at the team, how do you keep a team motivated, as motivated as an agency recruiter would be? A lot of that was around metrics. A lot of that, in all honesty, I don't think it's magic. It's knowing your team and knowing what motivates your team and making sure that they understand, what we're there to do, and what those metrics are. I think that's probably the biggest thing. There's a little more understanding, a little more conversation, a little more, it's probably those two things.
Yeah.
Than with an agency, because, you know, agency is, you know, I don't make placements, you know, I'm eating tuna out of a can for 3 days.
Yeah. I've never worked as a corporate recruiter, although I'm pretty sure I could play one on TV. But I mean, do you sleep better at nights on the corporate side, do you think? Because it's not so much about the placements, it's more about the function and the role.
No, don't misunderstand. There's still pressure. There is definitely pressure. It's what I had mentioned earlier, in that, you know, if TA isn't bringing quality candidates to the party, you know, the business isn't meeting their schedules, isn't, again, producing revenue. And the first step to that whole talent journey is the recruiting, right? And yeah. and the acquisition of talent. So no, there's just a different type of pressure. It might not be monetary. In some cases, the way internal setup, it may be in corporate, but it really does boil down to the perceived value add of the companies, that the company has of the internal talent acquisition. So no, I don't want to kid you. There's still a lot of pressure internally too to make placements.
Right. Okay. So it's not necessarily a bed of roses, because a lot of recruiters, they want the satisfaction of a regular paycheck, which becoming an internal recruiter does offer you. And you're not so reliant upon placements, because it's much more of a commission driven environment when you're on the agency side. And so that's why I think a lot of people have decided to move over to internal. But I think there's benefits to both on both sides. And I know brilliant recruiters on both sides of the fence, and I've had many of them on here. What kind of words of wisdom can you leave us with today for the recruiters who are listening to this, Joe, in terms of, like, you know, being successful in 2024?
You know, I don't know if they're words of wisdom, but they're words. And, you know, that would probably be, again, I think we said it, you know, treat the candidates exactly as you'd want to be treated. Understand who you're recruiting for. Understand the data that's available to you and your audience and how to present it. And, you know, if this doesn't excite you on a daily basis, if you don't get wound up on the agency side about learning from different businesses, or if you don't get wound up and excited about learning it internally for the business that you support from a corporate perspective, might be time for another job. because really and truly, that natural curiosity to me is something that I don't know can necessarily be trained, but some of the best recruiters I've ever been around have that. Yeah. And just keep that curiosity and learn and listen.
Yeah. And if you don't have that curiosity and that passion, it's pretty obvious to people on the phone. It comes through and you're not going to be able to move the needle at all.
I'm sorry. At that point, you become a telemarketer. That's the way I look at it, you know? Again, I don't know if those are words of wisdom or words, but that's what I got.
Let's call them words of wisdom. I really appreciate you, Joe, coming along to Recruiting Trailblazers today. I think we've cracked it. Another episode of Recruiting Trailblazers in the can. So thanks again, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks for the opportunity. Take care.
Cheers.